Radio Buddhist Youth Association. Good day, everybody. You are listening to the sound of universal compassion. Today is the 20th of October. We will continue listening to Master Tenjin Chosen's previous program, Meditation, Dying, and Karma. And please enjoy.
This show is brought to you by the Buddhist Youth Association, bringing Buddhism to the community of the Waikato. We also give away a range of free English or Chinese Buddhism books, MP3, or tapes on Buddhism. If you'd like one, please send a letter with $3 worth of stamps in an envelope to P.O. Box 82146, Highland Park, Howick, Auckland. Or you can phone 09271-3377. Buddhist Youth Association, respectful, beneficial, empowering. Welcome and thank you for joining us on Dharma Radio today. Over the last few weeks, we've been considering karma, how it comes about and what makes it heavy. As I said last week, we need to know about karma because it determines our future. If we know the causes of suffering, naturally we'll do everything in our power to avoid them and instead to create the causes for happiness. Before we continue with our discussion, though, let's bring our attention to our motivation for being involved in this program today. Actions done only for the happiness of this life don't contribute to any long-term happiness and mostly have a suffering result in the future. So if we participate in this program to brag to our friends what holy people we are, it will lead to an unhappy result in the future because of our self-cherishing attitude. If, however, our motivation is to gain some knowledge to help others, and especially to help them attain enlightenment, we will experience positive results now and in the future. So now, let's take a moment to set the motivation to gain enlightenment, particularly to benefit all others. Thank you. And now back to karma. Karma, as those of you who were with us over the last couple of weeks know, means action, and basically it covers any action we do, the effect that action leaves on our mind, and the result it produces in the future. Every single action leaves an effect, like a seed on our mental continuum. Then, like the seed of a plant, when the conditions are right, that seed will germinate and produce a result. Whether the result is pleasant or not depends on whether the original action was motivated well or badly. If the intention was aimed at future lives, or better still, liberation or enlightenment, the result will be in the nature of happiness. But if the intention was harmful or only aimed at some happiness for this life, we will experience unhappiness. Often when this is explained to Westerners, they think that karma means you get punished for your sins. This is an idea transferred from other religions that say if you transgress the laws of God, he will punish you. In Buddhism, we don't believe such a being as an omnipotent creator God exists, and karma is not a punishment. It is merely the result of an action. Can you say that if you are burned by touching a hot plate on your stove, you're being punished? If that is your view, it means your stove has the power to punish you. Obviously, you're not being punished. You were burned because you made the mistake of touching the hot plate, perhaps thinking it was not on. Similarly, karma operates not according to some being dictating what is right and wrong, but by a particular instance of the law of cause and effect. For Buddhists, everything is ruled by the law of cause and effect. In the Rice Seedling Sutra, in the beginning of a verse outlining the 12 links of dependent arising, the Buddha said, "Due to the existence of this, that arises. Due to the production of this, that is produced." The first line, "Due to the existence of this, that arises," indicates that things are not created by a higher being like a creator God, but by causes and conditions. You may think of an apple tree, for instance. It didn't come into existence through a superior being zapping the ground and saying, "Hey, presto, an apple tree." It came into being because a seed was planted and all the conditions, such as warmth, fertile soil, moisture, and so on, were present. Even the original seed didn't just happen out of some kind of magic, but came from the fruit of a previous tree. So we can trace all the causes and conditions back to the Big Bang and even beyond that. Then in the second line, due to the production of this that is produced, the Buddha shows that things also don't come from some sort of permanent primal substance, but that their causes and conditions are impermanent. An ancient non-Buddhist school in India postulated that everything came from a permanent primal substance. I guess in ancient Christian terms, this could be similar to a god who is the primal permanent substance. Though I don't think that Indian primal substance was in fact conscious. But the point here is that the Buddha said it was a mistake to think some kind of permanent substance causes things. According to the law of cause and effect, they come about through impermanent causes and conditions. The rest of the verse, which we won't go into now, the Buddha shows that things don't arise through chance or chaotically, but that causes lead to specific results. So, as we indicated earlier, mental imprints from good intentions will have happy results, and actions with bad motivation will result in unhappy situations. Or in a more mundane example, you can't get an orange tree by planting apple seeds. If you want oranges, you must plant orange pips or seedlings. So karma has nothing to do with reward and punishment. It is merely a war working out of the law of cause and effect. Those people who say climate change is not due to human activities have little or no idea of this law. Of course people's activities affect the climate, merely because we're an integral part of and not separate from everything that happens. Every one of our actions has an effect on our environment, whether those actions are small or large. We may not see the effects, but we know quite well that it only takes a large number of people to each create a small action, and you get a cumulative effect that has a very great influence. So if every one of us pumps a single kilogram of carbon into the atmosphere, of course it's going to affect the climate. Anyway, we're not here to talk about climate change, although it's a good global example of cause and effect. Going back to karma, we can say that the power of karma is influenced by four main factors. The first of these is the object. We've mentioned this before, but it means that the higher the person we act in relation to, the more the powerful the karma. So, for instance, if you offer one flower to a Buddha, it's much more karmically powerful than if you offer a whole treasure chest full of jewels to an ordinary king. People who are karmically powerful are your parents, ordained people like monks and nuns, arhats, bodhisattvas, and Buddhas. The Tibetan tradition teaches that the most powerful person is your root teacher, who is regarded as the manifestation of a Buddha himself. The second factor is the power according to the subject. That is the person creating the karma. I, as a fully ordained monk, create more powerful karma, positive and negative, than someone who is not ordained or who is a novice monk. Even the karma of a novice monk is more powerful than that of a lay person. In fact, the more vows you hold, the more powerful your karma. So, for instance, say neither you nor your partner kill any creature, but you've taken a vow not to kill while your partner hasn't. Even though neither of you kill, you will create the virtuous karma of not killing because of the vow, but your partner will not. While you hold the vow, you will be creating that positive karma all the time, even when asleep. Of course, it is not easy to take lifetime vows, but in most Buddhist traditions, it is possible to take vows for a day or two, like the eight precepts in the Theravada Sila program, or the Mahayana one-day precepts tradition. For every second of that whole day, while you hold those vows, you will create white karma that can lead to much happiness in the future. So it's definitely worthwhile to take such precepts once or twice a month, or as many times as you can. Then the next factor involves whatever you're using in the action. Say you want to make an offering. You may put some flowers out of your garden on the altar as an offering to the Buddha, but by practicing the Dharma in some way, perhaps by reciting sutras or meditating, you'll be making a better offering and creating more powerful karma. Practicing what the Buddha taught or what your teacher told you to do is always much more powerful than any material offering. And talking about practice, continuous practice generates more positive karma than if you only practice occasionally. So it's a good idea to do some practice every day, and then as the day goes by, to remember your practice and apply it to whatever you are doing. So for instance, say you meditate every morning on impermanence, how everything is always changing. Instead of forgetting your meditation once you get up and start following your daily program, try to remember how things are impermanent in everything you do. As you eat, you can think of how the food changed in the preparation, how it transforms as you chew on it, and then what happens to it in your body until it is toilet waste. Okay, so you might think this is a pretty yucky way of thinking of delicious food, but if we do this regularly, not only will it deepen our understanding of impermanence, but it will help a bit in overcoming our attachment to food. We have a better chance of seeing how we often see food as a much more attractive thing than it really is. However, if we just occasionally do this meditation, our old habits will too easily click in, and those benefits will be lost. We'll just go back to thinking that ice cream and chocolate cake are truly delicious, even when they're being mashed up in our stomach into a horrible goo. Then we come to the third point, that karma is made more powerful by the amount of happiness or suffering involved. So someone who tortures an animal before killing it will create much more powerful negative karma than if they slaughter the animal with a clean shot to the head. Or perhaps, obviously, you will create more positive karma by feeding 100 beggars than if you only feed 10. So you can imagine the amount of positive karma Sister Teresa created over all those years that she fed and looked after the beggars in Calcutta. The last factor to influence the power of karma is intention. We've talked about the importance of intention before every program, so we can gain the most possible use out of it. Intention usually means not doing things just for the happiness in this life, but for future lives' happiness. But that is still a pretty small intention. Once that life is over, so is any benefit. So it's best to set a motivation to gain enlightenment, particularly to be the best help to all others. This is said to be the greatest motivation of all, and will bring with it very powerful positive karma, as it is focused on helping so many beings. So then, there you have four factors to keep in mind when you want to create powerful karma: the object, the subject, the substance of the action, and the intention. Now let's create some really strong positive karma together. Do you think you can take the five precepts for the rest of the day? That is, not to kill anything intentionally, not to steal anything, not to indulge in sexual misconduct. Basically, that means not to have sex with anybody except your partner, and to avoid alcohol, drugs, or mind-altering substances. If you can, then please take them with me. First, let's generate a really good motivation. Think that you're going to do this practice to gain enlightenment, to help all other beings also become enlightened, just as the Buddha did. Now I'm going to recite the refuge verses and then the five precepts. Please recite after me. Homage to him, the blessed one, the exalted one, the fully enlightened one. Homage to him, the blessed one, the exalted one, the fully enlightened one. Homage to him, the blessed one, the exalted one, the fully enlightened one. I go to Buddha as my refuge, I go to Dharma as my refuge, I go to the Sangha as my refuge. For For the second time, I go to the Buddha as my refuge. For the second time, I go to the Dharma as my refuge. For the second time, I go to Sangha as my refuge. For the third time, I go to Buddha as my refuge. For the third time, I go to Dharma as my refuge. For the third time, I go to Sangha as my refuge. I undertake to observe the precept to abstain from destroying the life of beings. I undertake to observe the precept to abstain from taking things not given. I undertake to observe the precept to abstain from sexual misconduct. I undertake to observe the precept to abstain from false speech. I undertake to observe the precept to abstain from spirit drinks and so on, foundations for heedlessness. Think that you now have the five precepts on your mind stream and you will keep them until sunrise tomorrow. With that positive potential, let's do a meditation on love and compassion to finish off the program. Sit comfortably in your usual meditation posture and focus your mind on your breath, letting the thoughts arise and fade without being involved in them. Allow your mind to become as spacious as the sky. Chakra in the middle of your chest, a beautiful light, warm and radiant. It is the light of your love and compassion. Love being the wish for happiness, compassion the wish to be free from suffering. The light gets bigger and bigger until it fills your whole body and mind completely. Give yourself all the love and compassion you could possibly want. Imagine on either side of you the people closest to you, your relatives and so on. Remember, they have problems and difficulties just like you and want to be free of them just like you. Send your light out to them, filling them, bringing them everything they need for long-term happiness and freeing them from all suffering. And acquaintances with all their problems and difficulties, just like you. Send your light of love and compassion out to them, freeing them from all difficulties and bringing them every happiness they could wish for. Are in front of you. We might think of them as enemies, though it really means those people who, when you think of them, cause some irritation or aversion to rise in your mind. They too have their sufferings and want happiness, just like oneself. So send your light out to them, free them from all their suffering, and give them all the happiness they could desire. Surrounding you are all other beings, from the tiniest insect or even microbe to the largest creature in the universe. They too want happiness and want to be free of all suffering. So send your light out to them, eliminating all their misery, even the smallest, and bring them every happiness. Positive energy we've generated to gaining enlightenment for yourself and all other beings, and come out of meditation. By generating a powerful intention, taking precepts, and doing a meditation focused on all beings, we've created a strong karma. So I hope you feel very happy. Now it's time to sign off. I hope you'll join us again next week. Until then, goodbye.